Okay. Good afternoon. It is approximately 1:38 p.m. It is Wednesday, February 28th. I want to welcome everybody from the general public here today. Colleagues, welcome. Why don't we establish a quorum so we can start today's hearing. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Atkins.
Here.
Atkins here. Berryhill.
Here.
Berryhill here. Leyva.
Here.
Leyva here. Canella.
Here.
Canella here. De Leon.
Here.
De Leon here.
Fantastic. We've established a quorum. Why don't we go to the file items that are before us? We have file item number 2 through number 4. Can I get a motion?
Sure.
We have a motion made by Ms. Leyva. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Atkins.
Aye.
Atkins aye. Berryhill.
Aye.
Berryhill aye. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva aye. Canella.
Aye.
Canella aye. De Leon.
Aye.
De Leon aye.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chair. Welcome. You know, why don't we go to the first appointee we have us that is before us. That is Ms. Rebecca B. May, Chief Professional of Fiduciaries Bureau. Ms. May, welcome. Good afternoon. Why don't we do this? You have, I think, a very enthusiastic son. That's and I appreciate that he's waving with a lot of pride the California flag. You know, so if there are any loved ones that you want to introduce, please do so. Let's do a quick synopsis of your person, and we'll go to any questions or answers from the members.
Thank you. And thank you for letting me acknowledge my family before we start. With me today is my husband, James May. Well, and I would be remiss if I did not mention that today is our 14th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
And also with me is my mom, Magda.
And your son also, congratulations.
And, yes, and my 9-year-old son, Evan. Yeah. These three mean the world to me, as you can imagine. So thank you.
Go ahead. You may proceed.
Yes. Good afternoon, President Pro Tem De Leon, Vice Chairman Canella, senators, and staff. Thank you for allowing me to discuss my pending Senate confirmation today. As you know, I serve as the Bureau Chief for the Professional Fiduciaries Bureau located within the Department of Consumer Affairs. Working on consumer protection policy has been the overarching theme of my career. Prior to my appointment as Bureau Chief, I spent 2.5 years with the department, serving as both an analyst for the Legislative and Regulatory Review Division and as a Special Assistant to Board and Bureau Relations. I also spent 5 years as a consultant with the Assembly Business and Professions Committee. These experiences were the catalyst to my current position and prepared me for the challenges of being a Bureau Chief. Simply stated, I love this job. My previous work allowed me to shape consumer protection policies, but serving as Bureau Chief is a very tangible and direct way to serve consumers. Professional fiduciaries work with the most vulnerable populations, seniors, children, persons with disabilities, essentially those who are unable to make decisions over their own care or finances. I pledge to make sure only qualified individuals are licensed and that our Professional Fiduciaries Code of Ethics is upheld through our enforcement efforts. I also pledge to work with stakeholders toward identifying and eliminating unnecessary barriers to licensure. And as one of the newer licensing entities under DCA, I'm committed to increasing our outreach efforts so that more people can learn about the Bureau and the profession. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Ms. May, why don't we start with questions and answers from the members, commentaries. Ms. Leyva.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. Good afternoon, Ms. May. Very much enjoyed meeting with you. I have to say, I love your enthusiasm. I also love that you explained to me exactly what your job entails, since I didn't completely understand that. And it's a very important job. How do you think we can do a better job? How do you feel that you can do a better job in outreach to make sure that everyone knows that this is available to them?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. I think outreach is really the cornerstone of what I'm trying to do. I realize that most people don't know what fiduciaries do. Our bureau is just a small licensing bureau that licenses professional fiduciaries. They serve seniors and children and persons with disabilities. I've got a couple of steps towards increasing our outreach efforts. I am working with the department to set forward an outreach program. We're also in the final steps of putting together a strategic plan where we have, you know, actionable items and objectives that we can work towards to carry forth the gospel of fiduciaries.
That's great. That sounds very good. What do you think the biggest challenge that the Bureau faces? I think the biggest challenge is that there's two of you and one borrowed staff.
Yes.
But what do you find to be the biggest challenge?
That is a challenge. We are small on resources and on name recognition. So I am certainly open to suggestions on how we can improve that. I think we have a good solid team in place with the employees that we have. I have a lot of support through the department, and so I'm trying to leverage existing resources that are already out there to help improve the visibility of the Bureau and the profession.
Very good. Thank you very much. No further questions, Mr. Pro Tem.
Ms. Leva, Mr. Berryhill.
No questions.
Thank you very much. Ms. Atkins.
Pro Tem, and I am actually incredibly sorry I didn't have the opportunity to meet with you. I had an incredible report to review, thanks to my staff. I agree with Ms. Leva, this seems like an incredibly important job and position, and I noted the resources as well. I want to ask, the intention originally was that there would be more fiduciaries and licensure, and it seems like it's roughly not quite half, or more than half. Are there fiduciaries who are not licensed who do this work with?
Well, you can do this work and not have a license if you are doing it for family members or for a really limited number of people. So fiduciaries, it's one license type, but it's essentially four different roles: guardians, conservators, trustees, and power of attorney. For healthcare and or finances. So those are generally the four roles that they take. You can, and there's certain thresholds for each role,
right,
that necessitates licensure.
So it sounds like in the literature or the report I read that there could potentially be a declining number of...
Well, our numbers have been trending upwards.
Upwards,
yes.
But there seemed to be a concern that there needed to be a focus on more.
Yes, I do recognize that it's a small program, and there is a need for more licensees to come into the fold. Uh-huh. Since our last, and we're going through sunset review right now, since
right,
our last sunset review, we've increased our licensee numbers by 15%. So it is trending upwards. I think with California's aging population,
right,
there's opportunity certainly for this profession. I know that the Professional Association is really active, and so partnering with them to... increase our outreach, I think, would be a good way to hopefully increase those licensure numbers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, it seems to me like I again want to agree with Ms. Leva. Your enthusiasm and your focus, attention on how to make this robust and a strategic plan that's longer past the 2018 and sunset review. I really appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I think it's really important. So I look forward to seeing this grow in a way that is helpful to our constituents throughout California. That's it, Mr. Pro Tem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Atkins. Mr. Cannella. No questions. Okay. For those who are in support of today's nominee, Ms. May, come on up. For those who are in support, seeing none, those who are in opposition, yes, please, come on. You can go to the microphone right there. I don't want you to get comfortable.
I had that look, didn't I?
Yeah.
So, Chair and members, Jerry Desmond, on behalf of the Professional Fiduciary Association of California, our organization was the co-sponsor of the Licensure Act about a decade ago. We couldn't be more pleased that the governor has appointed a bureau chief and that it is Rebecca May. You know, her stellar reputation from working here in the Capitol and in the Department of Consumer Affairs is confirmed by the months that we've worked with Rebecca in her role of carrying forward the mission of the Bureau to protect consumers and the vulnerable populations. And we believe she has the vision and the fair approach and open mind that has partnered with us and our association as we look towards growing the 730 licensees to even more. So we support her confirmation.
Thank you very much. Any other folks in support of today's nominees? Seeing none, those in opposition. Your son's Evan, right?
Yes.
Yes, yes. We'll register Evan as an official supporter, Ms. May.
Always count on his.
Yeah. Any folks in opposition or want to run the risk of incurring the wrath of Evan? Okay. Seeing none, then if there are any other further questions or commentaries from the members, I'm seeing none. Can I get a motion? We have a motion made by Ms. Leyva. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Atkins.
Aye.
Atkins, aye. Berryhill.
Aye.
Berryhill, aye. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Cannella.
Aye.
Cannella, aye. DeLeon.
Aye.
DeLeon, aye.
Ms. May, congratulations. You pass on a 5-0 vote. Congratulations. Next, we have Ms. Karen S. Yamamoto. Karen S. Yamamoto, a member of the STIRS Board, the California Teachers Retirement Board. Ms. Yamamoto, welcome.
Thank you.
Please, if there's anyone that you'd like to introduce, please do so. And right afterwards, why don't you give us a synopsis of your person, and we'll go to any questions or commentaries from the members.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Mr. Pro Tem and members of the committee. I'm here today with my family and friends, my husband of 53 years, Gary, and our daughter Elaine and her husband Joe, and our other daughter Gina, and her husband couldn't be here today, but my grandchildren are, Emmy and Kai. And also with me today are my sister-in-law and brother-in-law, Georgette and Roy Imura. Other family and friends are here in the audience as well, so thank you for letting me introduce them. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to appear here before you today, and I'm proud to be appointed to the Teachers Retirement Board. I feel that I've made a full circle because I started working at the Department of Education, then I worked at the legislature, and then I was a classroom teacher. And while I was doing that, I was appointed by the state board to the Curriculum Materials Committee. It has a long name, but I'll cut it short. And eventually, I was able to retire. So now, as a retired teacher, after about 10 years, I found out that I have this fantastic opportunity and great privilege and responsibility to have this new job with the Teachers Retirement Board. And yes, I call it a job. I tell my friends it's my new job, and I take it very seriously. I want to be the voice that other retirees can depend on to represent their experience and concerns. And as a retired teacher on the board, I'm also one of the California educators to receive the benefits of that retirement. I want to continue the work of CalSTRS to make sure that decisions that I make as one person on a 12-member board to help the hardworking teachers of California achieve a secure retirement. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Yamamoto. What we'll do is we'll go to questions and answers right now. Why don't we start with Ms. Atkins?
Thank you very much, and thank you so much for being here. I had a couple of questions. In your letter to the Rules Committee, you talked about the key to reducing underfunding would be to allow the board to further adjust contribution rates. And if the board is given the authority to further adjust rates, how do you balance the need to solve that issue of the unfunded liability and the contribution rates with the fact that the teachers, the school districts, and the state pays more? I mean, that seems, we grapple with that. You're dealing with it all the time. Will you comment a little bit on that?
Well, we get a report from our actuaries every November.
Right.
And it's a full report if this happens, then this will happen. If this happens, then this
right.
happens. And so we kind of, the bottom line for that latest report that we received in November was we're okay. We're on the road to full funding by 2046. And the legislation that all of you passed in 2014 is the funding source that all the stakeholders appeared to be supporting. So I think as far as balancing out, we're just keeping on track and keeping our the information that we receive and the funding sources. So. We're just trying to, we monitor that closely.
So I imagine you hear from administrators as well as teachers, and of course, none of us want to pay more because we all have budgets.
Correct.
The state has a budget. Each school district has a budget. And when they take more to pay more for this, they feel like it comes out of their resources to actually do the work. So I was curious because this is what I hear all the time, and I appreciate how difficult this is and your response. I know it's...
We've been getting a lot of, everybody's been getting a lot of pushback in the press and,
right.
And us too. But as far as I understand, I wasn't around when the legislation was passed, but all three entities were
right.
at the table
yes.
discussing it.
That's exactly what I tell them.
Right. And everybody agreed, and they knew what was coming along the line, and then we just have to,
right.
to play it
and
out.
We have to live with it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, thank you.
I appreciate it. I certainly understand. Let me ask about the role of charter schools in terms of the choice to be part of CalSTRS or to do something else. I imagine that is choosing Social Security. And do the charter schools, in your evaluation and look at this, the charter schools have 401ks and other things that?
As far as I know, yes.
Okay.
But then the majority of them have chosen CalSTRS.
Right. I got that. But I think obviously a part of it, and you mentioned further conversations with teachers and folks to help them understand why it's beneficial to be part
Correct.
Of the bigger system.
Correct.
And so why are they telling you they would choose for the small percentage, the majority chooses to be part of the bigger system. Why do they say they choose not to be? I'm just curious.
We're getting mixed. We're not getting accurate information right now, as far as I understand.
Uh-huh.
And we're still researching it. And there was a trend, a lot of, I don't know the exact numbers, but a lot of the charter schools are CalSTRS. But then there was a trend that recently that a study that was made that they're not going to CalSTRS. And we really don't know the reason.
It sounds like you're not getting a lot of responses.
Correct.
You're putting the question out
that
there.
Right.
You're trying to find out. Well, that may be something we need to...
And we're still monitoring that.
Because right.
Because if it is a trend, then we want to make sure that we go in there and make sure that the entire educational community knows about it. And that if it's... This was only done for like 2 years in a row, I believe. And so that's really not enough to say it's a trend. So,
right.
But we're really closely monitoring that.
I'll be interested going forward in kind of what you learn.
Okay.
I know you're doing a number of different, and I can follow up. My staff will follow up and kind of monitor it annually. But I appreciate your comment on that because I think it bears looking at.
Yes, absolutely.
And then lastly, the last question or comment I would have is on the issue of diversity on boards. Mm-hmm. I know there's a study either has come out or coming out to really look at that, and I know that's an issue of particular interest to the Women's Caucus and a number of the women in terms of how to increase gender parity or at least have one person on the board
mm-hmm.
Going forward. So I'd be interested in any thoughts you have on that and if the study is out, my staff will get a copy. I'd love to see it. But how you see that going forward, because any help in that is really, this is related to your investment strategy. So any help you're able to provide on that, I really appreciate your taking an active role as a board and as a member of the board on that issue. But if you want to comment on that briefly, just your thoughts, that's my last question.
Okay. Well, CalSTRS is genuinely interested in the diversity part of the companies that we invest in. And so our corporate division has also been active globally and has been recognized globally to be involved, be at the table, and do the engagement for the different companies to encourage diversity. And it's not only with the women on the board, but it's also
other
right. diversity issues.
Of course.
So.
So, do you feel like your board, sorry, I did to add on to that, do you feel like the work of the board has actually, you see the results of a positive impact of having those policies has impacted corporate America?
I think so, because our staff, our board, has gone to do the proxy voting to to make sure that when the proxy season comes, we look at the boards and how diverse they are. And if they aren't, then we do engagement.
Okay.
We do all those things.
I'm sure the pro tem will have questions on the environmental piece of diversity on the portfolio. So I'll leave that to him. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Atkins. Mr. Cannella.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. Ms. Yamamoto and I just met and talked for about 30 minutes, and she answered all my questions. I have no further questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cannella. Mr. Berryhill.
Thank you, and good afternoon.
Hi.
I've just got really one question. I'm curious. A decade ago, schools paid about 8% of an employee's wages to CalSTRS. Now, the contribution rate is 14.4% and raising to 19%. Now, according to the LAO, unfunded liability stood at $96.7 billion this last year. So I guess my question is, have you thought about what are you going to do and tell these people when you have to raise this stuff to 25%? I mean, you're going to have to raise their contributions even more, aren't you?
I'm not sure about that, but I thought I was told that there's a different there's a mandated amount that we can do that.
Well, I'm just taking the LAO's report here, and we're still underfunded by $96 billion, almost $97 billion. So. At some point, we're up to 19%. It seems to me you're going to have to raise those contributions even more.
Well, as far as I know, the funding level that we're at and the projected amounts, the increases or the contributions, that by 2046, and that was the intent of the legislation in 2014, that we reach that for full funding by 46.
Well,
based on those numbers.
The unfunded liability increased by $15 billion this last year. And that's just, it's concerning. I mean, we got to come up with that money somewhere. And it's probably from the employees or the school district.
Okay, so we have a shared responsibility, too.
Yeah. Okay. I was just curious what your thoughts were on it. It's a challenge.
Pardon me?
It's a challenge.
It is a challenge. It is a challenge. And we get information from our chief investment officer every month as a board member to do a mid-month status report, you might call it, to know where we are in terms of the month and our percentages and our outlook for our investment returns. So hopefully with that, and then we monitor those closely, so to oversee those.
Okay, just final here. How does the board communicate with districts on potential future contribution increases beyond those in the 1914 law so they can try to prepare for them?
Okay, as far as outreach, there's been a lot of outreach to the stakeholders by staff. And that's the communication that I understand. Mm-hmm. And so when we have our board meetings, there's always representatives there from the various stakeholder groups. And then we also do press releases, a press release to the various stakeholders.
Okay, thank you. That's it, Mr. President.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Berryhill. Ms. Leva.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. Ms. Yamamoto, I want to commend you for being willing to take this position on as a retiree. And I just from our discussions, it's a lot of work for you, a lot of research. I was impressed by your breadth of knowledge already. But I'm also just really want to say thank you because pensions guarantee that seniors won't live in poverty. And pensions sometimes have a bad name now, and people don't see them for what they really are and how incredibly important they are. I believe that the market value of CalSTRS investments in 2017 was $209 billion with a return rate of 13.4%. So that was a very good year last year. With your return rate assumption of only 7%, that was almost doubled. I understand that it doesn't always work that way, but that was a good year. Good job. Pensions can combat the link between gender and poverty. Most Americans fail to save enough for retirement, leading to either the need to work after age 65, sometimes into your 80s, and or poverty and even homelessness in old age. This is particularly true for women, who are already 38% more likely to live in poverty than men. What is the percentage of women that are collecting a pension from CalSTRS?
Actually, it's 72% of women and 28% men.
Very good. And I think part of the challenge for yourself and CalSTRS is that people are living longer.
Yes.
And so you try to make those projections, but it is difficult. How old are your oldest members right now that are collecting pensions?
Well, that's an interesting question. We have about a little over 300 members that are 100 years or more.
How many?
100 years old, about 300 of our members. Can you believe that?
300 members or how?
Every month, our chair signs happy birthday letters to at least a dozen members.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know this right now, but K through 12 public school teachers, what's the gender ratio?
28% men. 72% women.
The current ratio.
It covers, well, there's 933, more than 933,000 members in CalSTRS. And it's the same percentage of the active and the same percentage of the retired.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Very good. So I just wanted you to bring that up because I think it's important for people to note that people are living significantly longer than they did in the past, and it makes it a little bit hard sometimes to plan for their future. A question about our young people. I think, as I said before, pensions sometimes get a bad name because people just hear about the unfunded liability. They don't think about the fact that we're keeping people out of poverty. And I worry that our young people who are entering this profession don't see it as something that they need. What are you doing on CalSTRS, or what can CalSTRS do to make sure the newest members of the workforce realize what a benefit this is to them and how important it is to be a part of it?
That was one of my main questions when I assumed the board position, that we have a early career workshop information brochures, we have a mid-career, and then we have a almost retiring group of people. And so there are different workshops tailored to those different groups. And so most recently, I work in the district in West Sacramento. And I contacted our superintendent with CalSTRS in the retirement readiness. So on their first day of new teacher orientation day, we had a little booth. CalSTRS had a little booth passing out information to say, this is what CalSTRS is. This is what it can do for you. Here are some brochures. Here's a website. Make sure you look at that. Make sure you sign up for mycalsters.com so that you'll be acquainted with all the information that's available. There's a plethora of information on the website. And then the mid-careers, to know that, you know, if you've been teaching for maybe 10 years or so, you might want to look again and check to see what your options are at that point. And then when you're close to retirement, they say maybe 5 or 6 years before you think about retiring, that you'll have some plan in place, and to know if you're saving enough money, because you're probably only going to get about a little over half of your retirement when you retire. And that's a pretty good amount, but certainly not enough to live on. So, you know, we encourage the additional savings for the teachers to have a more comfortable retirement.
Thank you. I think that is terrific that you hit three different areas of someone's life to get them involved in their pension. None of us think we're going to get old. We get there before we know it. And
in my job, you get older, you know, dog years, you know.
And I think it's critical for our young people because they don't understand how important it is. So thank you for that outreach, and thank you for serving on the board. We're very lucky to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ms. Leyva. Just one simple question. I wasn't planning on asking any questions, but I got teed up. How do you handle, obviously, your role and responsibility, your fiduciary obligation, your fiduciary responsibility as a board member of CalSTRS, balancing portfolio, trying to get the highest yield possible for your retirees, because that's your responsibility to do so in a manner that is fiscally prudent and hopefully, knock on wood, if your investors make the right decision, the prudent decision, get the highest yield as possible, and obviously keep the pension fund as whole as possible. So how do you balance those fiduciary responsibilities and obligations that you have with senators, assembly members, a governor that may have different agendas, such as my Senate Bill 185, which is the divestment of thermal coal? I think folks will be in support, theoretically in support, but also at the same time, maybe perhaps shudder at the idea, the thought that legislatively we are sort of, based on our values, that we're sort of putting these parameters around the ability for a fund to grow. That is your fiduciary responsibility. But then we also have the issues of climate, the issues of guns, the issues of tobacco that harm the public good, and the types of investments that we make either reflect of our values, but can also, types of investments may not be reflective of our values, but at times can produce a high yield. So how do you balance your fiduciary responsibility with the demands of a state that seeks values-driven, based decision-making, even when it comes to pension plans?
Well, that's a big question, so I'll try to answer that. The main thing that I was told that I always had to concentrate on as a board member was my one-hat rule, that I have one hat, and that is to the members of CalSTRS. And I believe that I recently heard our chief investment officer say his job as far as investment officer is to make money for the fund. And to do that, we have to carefully examine and do a thorough analysis of any time there is an issue of divestiture. So we had asked that once before, too, that, we have risk policies in place. They used to be called 21 risk factors, but now there's more than that, so we just call them risk factors. And so it's before we invest in any kind of company or firm or industry, we check off those kinds of risk factors to make sure that they are going to be the ones that we want to invest in. And he also told me that we're long-term investors. So if we do short-term investing and we pull out of that, we may lose money. One of the latest figures we received was we've lost, since divestiture, we've lost $5.5 billion. And so, but...
Of what specifically?
Of money. I think it was mostly tobacco.
Okay,
I think it was mostly tobacco. That's what I think.
I don't want you to say thermal coal.
No. No, if it was that, I would not
say. I don't want a bunch of retirees here. Okay.
No, but I mean, we look... we look to the legislature too to keep that in mind, that we want to, before we have to divest, that a careful analysis is made, and jointly by both the Senate and the Assembly, so that because our chief and our CEO basically said that if we pull out, somebody else is going to jump right in, and so we lose the money the money that's going to be paid to our $933,000 members, 72% of which are women, remember? So we want to make sure that that money is there, but we also are cognizant of the fact that the risk factors and the environmental concerns, all the other concerns are carefully studied before we actually do that.
No, it's a good point. And it's not just, obviously, your fiduciary responsibility is to get the highest return for the pensioners. And in this case, more than three-fourths of them are women, in fact, because
right.
It's a reflection of the of the rank and file members up and down the state of California for a whole variety of reasons. Obviously, women were told, well, listen, you can only teach at the time, you know, and were treated very badly in their working conditions and were not allowed to have collective bargaining agreements at the time, and let alone health plans and pension plans, because you should rely on your husband's income, the main income, quote unquote, you know, back in the day. And obviously things have changed quite dramatically with CBAs negotiating at the table, better working conditions and so forth. And these fiduciary pressures that we have in terms of the economy and again, your main role, which is to get the highest yield possible for our teachers who've dedicated their years, their lives to our students in California. And again, how you balance that, because it's not, just not exclusively, because we have values too, whether it was apartheid, whether it's tobacco, whether it's the issue of firearms, and this issue, the thermal coal, you know, so it's, I know everyone has a sort of different, you know, thought or opinion, and I know there's a sense of discomfort, you know, whether it's CalSTRS or whether it's CalPERS, you know, not just exclusive to CalSTRS, you know, but I appreciate the methodology that you go through to the best of your ability, and when something arrives again from our body to you, you know, and whether we get the feedback from you and feedback from other folks, you know, who benefit directly, it's helpful. We live in a much more complicated world with a lot of conflicts globally, and those political ramifications, even at the state level, are global in nature because of the incredible diversity that we have in California, of so many different ethnicities from all over the world. So it does have an impact on our investment. So why don't we go to those who are in support of today's nominee, Ms. Yamamoto. Those who are in support, please line up behind the microphone. I'd ask that you recognize yourself and just give us a really quick reason why you support.
Good afternoon, Jennifer Baker with the California Teachers Association. Would like to provide our enthusiastic support. We think that Karen Yamamoto provides a wonderful bridge and a constant reminder of who our members are. And we very much appreciate the questions that you've asked, and we encourage you to support her nomination to ultimately help to continue to implement AB 1469 to keep CalSTRS fully funded. She's courageous in having conversations about divestment, about the wishes of the legislature and the wishes of the members, but ultimately we believe she will serve a very strong role as a reminder of what we're trying to achieve, which is retirement security for all our members through this very tumultuous times we're living in. So we encourage your support.
Thank you, Ms. Baker. Next witness in support.
My name is Ed Folia, and I am a retired teacher representing the California Teachers Association retirees. Been a member of CalSTRS since 1957 when I first started teaching, and been president of the California Teachers Association for 9 years. I have, for the past 10 years, been the liaison to CalSTRS, representing our membership, and I think I can speak for all our retirees when I talk about Karen Yamamoto. We had this position vacant for almost 6 years. And because of that, the viewpoint of retirees was not addressed on a personal basis on the board level. So when Karen was appointed by the governor, we were so happy to see her. Mm. But we didn't realize the kind of person that the governor appointed. I believe in all the years that I've been as a member, I don't believe there's ever been a person appointed to this position that is more qualified and diverse in many areas and such a humble person. He's a good listener. Matter of fact, we have an organizing meeting on in Torrance on Friday. She's coming, not as a speaker. She's coming to talk and meet with members.
So, Foley, I'm going to have to ask you this.
So I just wanted to say, that's part of my problem. I'm long-winded.
No, it's quite okay. You used to be former CTA president. I understand.
But the thing is, our enthusiasm for Karen, I am impressed that she has picked up as much as she has in this short period of time. She works so hard, she does her homework, and she deserves a reappointment.
Thank you. Thank you much, Mr. Foglia. Next witness in support.
Good afternoon, Mr. Pro Tem and members. Derek Lennox on behalf of a number of school employer associations representing school leaders across the state, the Association of California School Administrators, the School Employers Association of California, and the Small School Districts Association, all in support of Karen Yamamoto. We've been really impressed by her work so far. And the two most common questions we get from our members, first is about the long-term sustainability of the fund and whether it's going to be there. And so when Karen talks about wearing the one hat, that's exactly what we want to hear because we share that priority. And the second are about the complex policy questions that you all have raised as senators here today. We bug them with the same questions. And so to have somebody who's such a great listener, who has the background and experience to do this work, we're just really excited to continue to work with her as school employers and stakeholders within the system. We urge your support for Ms. Yamamoto. Thank you.
Thank you. Next witness in support.
Good afternoon. My name is Jackie Wong. For identification purposes today, I'm actually speaking as a trustee for the Washington Unified School District, as well as vice president, one of the few school districts that have called for a resolution for full and fair funding to implement LCFF that we implemented a little while ago to ensure equity. And I think that I can't think of anybody more qualified to be on the steering board for, again, that one hat that was spoken to. I must also say that we, as soon as she was appointed, she reached out to Washington Unified and did the practical things. Again, there's I've known Karen for almost 20 years, so sorry, we look very young. But in any case, she's been kind of knocking on our doorstep, in communication with me as well as the superintendent, to make this very practical. Ryan, to engage the members. So I've been really excited to have her as an appointee, and I urge that you appoint her to the STIRS.
Thank you. Next witness is support.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Sophia Kwon Kim, and I'm not normally on this side of the room, but I work for the legislature and the assembly, but today I had to come to support my friend and mentor, Karen Yamamoto. I have known Karen for over 25 years, and she's not only been a mentor to me, but to a lot of younger folks, who have entered the building since, meeting her. I also serve on the board with her on the Asian Pacific Youth Leadership Project, and at one time she was the treasurer of APYLP board, and I cannot tell you that there's not a better person to keep track of our expenses and, make sure that our bills are paid and in a timely manner. So I know that she's good with numbers. And so, again, on a personal level as well as on a professional level, I really urge your support of her appointment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mayor.
Mr. President Pro Tem and members of the committee, thank you. I'm Christopher Cabald, and I'm the mayor of the city of West Sacramento, where Karen has been a teacher and where CalSTRS is headquartered. So after teachers and the state, we're the third most interested in the solvency of our anchor, of the anchor organization in our city. And I have, our city is also the folks that have held Karen's portfolio of second graders all the way to maturity. And I can report to you that she consistently delivered returns of 15% or higher each year on those second graders. So you can count on her as well. I also happen to serve on that Asian Pacific Youth Leadership Board with Karen 25 years ago. And although her one hat then was the interests of the young people in that leadership project, even at that moment, the fiscal discipline and prudence that she exercised in that role in support of their development and their leadership was an exemplar. So I would highly recommend it on behalf of our community. Thanks for your consideration.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Any other folks in support? Seeing none, those in opposition? Seeing no opposition. Okay. Can I get a motion for Ms. Yamamoto? We have a motion made by Ms. Leva. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Atkins?
Aye.
Atkins, aye. Berryhill?
Aye.
Berryhill, aye. Leva?
Aye.
Leva, aye. Cannella?
Aye.
Cannella, aye. De Leon?
Aye.
De Leon, aye.
Ms. Yamamoto, congratulations. Okay, what we're going to do now, we are going to adjourn this meeting, and we're going to go into an executive session. So this meeting is adjourned.